Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by. I thought tonight that we'd talk about something that actually we touch on very frequently on this show, because it often, whatever our topic is, leads us to this particular worldwide problem. And that's mental illness. And, of course, today there are a myriad of diagnoses for mental illness, from bipolar to attention deficit to depression to things as difficult to deal with as schizophrenia, etc. In my tenure at Hippocrates Health Institute, I realized a few years ago that although cancer and cancers, deadly cancers, and illnesses that are as bad as cancer that strike many of us and our loved ones on a daily basis is an awful thing to go through, I don't think anything quite meets the toll of mental illness. Mental illness is one of those kind of things that you almost feel like, because you love somebody a whole bunch and you know that you have their welfare first and foremost in your mind, you almost feel like you can shake mental illness out of them. You almost feel like if you stand strong with them, you can talk them out of being in the place that they're in, and the very dark, very confusing place that they are. And in my experience with so many people that came through the doors of Hippocrates, it was kind of, it could be kind of scary. Not so much for me. I'm not that kind of a person. But many times for the parents or the loved ones of the people who were struggling with mental illness. I have some information that I pulled up tonight that I'd like to go through with everybody. The actual definition of mental illness are medical conditions that disrupt a person's thinking, feeling, mood, ability to relate to others, and daily functioning. Just as diabetes is a disorder of the pancreas, mental illnesses are a medical condition that often result in diminished capacity for coping with the ordinary demands of life. Now, I hope everybody really, really understood that, because that's a very, very packed full of information sentence. In other words, mental illness hinders your coping mechanism, and coping is something we have to do every day. The problems that are presented to us on a daily basis demand copability. Serious mental illnesses include major depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, which we've talked about on the show before, and borderline personality disorder. The good news about mental illness is that recovery is possible. Mental illnesses can affect persons of any age, race, religion, or income, obviously. Mental illnesses are not the result of personal weakness, lack of character, or poor upbringing. Mental illnesses are most often treatable. Most people diagnosed with a serious mental illness can experience relief from their symptoms by actively participating in an individual treatment plan. Now, we're going to have lots of open discussions about those treatment plans. because there are many people with a school of thought that lead you directly to pharmaceuticals. There are many schools of thought that lead you a long way away from pharmaceuticals and cleansing and taking away all of the chemicals and everything that we take in with some of our different food consumptions. Now, it was my experience at Hippocrates that most oftentimes, and I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychotherapist, I'm none of the above, but I have a lot of experience, and I want to say that most often I saw the best results with both of these treatments, with getting a handle on what you put into your body, which just makes so much sense to most of us, and with the help of a customized program to have you on specific pharmaceuticals that keep you in a balanced place. Now, I also believe, unlike some of the things I read today about heredity and family lineage and things like that having something to do with mental illness, every now and then when I'm reading some of these things, I see things that touch on that, but there's not a lot of conversation about. In addition to medication treatment, treatments such as cognitive behavioral therapy, interpersonal therapy, peer support groups, and other community services can also be components of a treatment plan and that assist with recovery. The availability of transportation, diet, exercise, sleep, friends, and meaningful paid or volunteer activities contribute to overall health and wellness, including mental illness recovery. Now, I hope everybody gets that and understands that. I think that that's a big part of what we're talking about, the fact that other things will enter into this this situation. Other things will make a difference if we use them like a package deal, like anything else that you're going to do. There's always separate entities. You can't just take care of one problem in most cases. In most cases, you have to address all the problems so that whatever you are addressing them with is compatible with your other problems. Now, I'm trying to think of an analogy now with something else that would help everybody understand what I'm talking about. One pill fixes all. We get that. But there is a one pill, things like meditation, things like therapy where you talk and you discuss and you put all these things that are causing so much turmoil inside of you out on the table to be discussed and sometimes actually talked away. Not everything. Obviously, this is a much deeper thing than that. But all of these things are going to help. And most certainly, what you put in your body is going to make a big, big difference. So I think that a lot of this has to be a real plan, a real program that you do that takes care of all of you. Say you're a car. Changing the oil doesn't fix a flat tire. Putting gas in your car doesn't make it start if the starters quit. All of these things have to work together, and it's the same with our bodies. So we have to think about this. Now, mental illness, the reason that this has come to light on so many different occasions is the other night when we talked about legalizing prostitution. And there's so many pros and cons about prostitution. And I understand that, and I appreciate that. But I also understand that in a lot of cases, the prostitution is being used by people that are having mental difficulties, either severe mental illness or things like severe depression. There's so many things that can be adding to the problems that you have. Now, I have a caller that's coming in, and I do not recognize the number. Shelley, if this is you and you're coming in under a different number, would you please call in again and see if the right number comes up? Because I've learned from experience to not answer some of these weird numbers, because sometimes it's... okay, so that must have been you because you hung up. So I'd like to continue sharing some of these other facts. Mental illnesses are serious medical illnesses. They cannot be overcome through willpower and are not related to a person's character or intelligence. Mental illness falls along a continuum of severity. In other words, it almost always gets worse if you don't do something to make it better. Even though mental illness is widespread in the population, the main burden of illness is concentrated in a much smaller proportion, about 6% or 1 in 17 Americans who live with a serious mental illness. The National Institute of Mental Health reports that 1 in 4 adults, approximately 57.7 million Americans, experience a mental health disorder in a given year. The United States Surgeon General reports that 10% of children and adolescents in the United States suffer from serious emotional and mental disorders that cause significant functional impairment in their day-to-day lives at home, in school, and with peers. The World Health Organization has reported that 4 of the 10 leading causes of disability, that means you can't work, you can't function in the adult world, and other developed countries are mental disorders. I'm going to read that again. That 4 of the 10 leading causes of disability in the U.S. and other developed countries are mental disorders. By the year 2020, major depressive illness will be the leading cause of disability in the world for women and children. Oh my gosh, what a sad fact. What a sad, sad fact. Mental illness usually strikes individuals in the prime of their lives, often during adolescence and young adulthood. All ages are susceptible, but the young adult and the old are especially vulnerable. Now, this, again, is kind of scary news. I think all of us understand that things like that can be kind of overwhelming to even hear. But some of it is being brought on by some of our treatments, very sadly. And there's a lot of discussion about that. There's a lot of points of view, and I think most of them have some validity. But until we do more research, I don't know if there's going to be any answers for it. I'm going to bring Shelley in because I'd like her to be with us while we read the rest of this article. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Rain. Is my number looking right now?
Yes. Yes, so that was you for sure, right?
Yeah, and you were breaking up real bad when I was showing the wrong number. So, there is an issue when you come in like that. It's not a good connection.
Yeah.
I heard most of what you were saying, though.
Okay. Well, the article, I even posted it on my Facebook page for those of you that would like to read this in the privacy of your home if you have concerns about anyone that you know and care about. So it is interesting, but it's just facts and numbers. It's not any kind of diagnostic thing. There's nothing that I read that tells you what to look for, anything like that. I would say to you, if you are experiencing any of these kind of things, though, that we talk about tonight, that you seek out some help. But it is our goal to have a couple of our friends that we have a lot of respect for in regard to psychotherapy and some therapy in regard to mental illness join us on the show and perhaps answer some questions. Maybe I could even take questions from people on my Facebook page and ask for them if they can't be there for the live show. I would love to be able to do that for people.
Mm-hmm.
In the prime of their life. Without treatment, the consequences of mental illness for the individual and society are staggering. Unnecessary disability, unemployment, substance abuse, homelessness, inappropriate incarceration, suicide, and wasted lives. That whole sentence is why we're talking about this. That whole sentence is what brought us to this particular topic. The economic cost of untreated mental illness is more than $100 billion each year in the United States. So we're talking about something that's at epidemic proportions at this particular point in time, and with no light at the end of the tunnel, it appears as though. The best treatments for serious mental illnesses today are highly effective. Between 70 and 90% of the individuals have significant reduction of symptoms and improved quality of life with a combination of pharmacological and psychosocial treatments and supports. Now, when we talk about those kind of things, we're not talking that mom and dad support you and they make sure that you get your pharmaceuticals and they make sure that you take them. We're talking about outside activities, peer groups, social groups where you can meet with people who are like-minded, just like our friends that are addicted to drugs or alcohol. They need those Al-Anon and AA meetings. They need them. They need them because it keeps them in touch with their struggle and keeps it in their reality. And they meet like-minded people who are on the same struggle, and it helps. It really, really helps. If you talk to somebody who's spent their life as an alcoholic or a drug abuser, and they finally made it to the proverbial other side with everything, they'll tell you one of the most important things to them was when they finally embraced those kind of meetings. That really helped them. But not until they embrace it. Otherwise, nothing helps unless you're ready to do it for yourself. I have a feeling I lost Shelley. I did lose Shelley. Okay. So, I'm going to continue reading until she comes back on. With appropriate effective medication and a wide range of services tailored to their needs, most people who live with serious mental illnesses can significantly reduce the impact of their illness and find a satisfying measure of achievement and independence. A key concept is to develop expertise in developing strategies to manage the illness process. In other words, find a way that suits you, or help your loved one find a way that suits them. We talk about this all the time. We are all so, so different that what works for Larry seldom works for Harry. So you've got to remember that we're all different, and in order to be successful in any of these endeavors, you're going to have to customize what it is you're doing. The other big, big thing that has to be recognized is early identification and treatment is of vital importance. By ensuring access to the treatment and recovery supports that are proven effective, recovery is accelerated and the further harm related to the course of illness is minimized. Notice that nobody's telling you it's gone. It will be something that you have to deal with the rest of your life. Stigma erodes confidence that mental disorders are real. Treatable health conditions. We have allowed stigma and a now unwarranted sense of hopelessness to erect attitudinal, structural, and financial barriers to effectively treat and recover. It is time to take these barriers down. That's a very heavy sentence or paragraph, and what it's saying is you've got to try. You have to do what you need to do to get yourself or your loved one to a better place. Just putting it in someone else's hands is not the answer. It has to stay in your hands. And don't we talk about that all the time? Taking responsibility for who we are, what we are, and how we function in this life is the single most endeavor that we make in our whole life. So were you able to hear most of what I read, Shel?
A good portion of it. I missed about maybe a minute and a half in the middle when I was trying to dial back in.
Mm-hmm. Are you on the road? Is that why I'm losing you?
Yeah, I went through West Atlantic Avenue, so you always lose me there.
Well, I liked this article. I found many, many articles. A lot of them just gave statistics, and that gets kind of boring. This is an organization called NAMI, and it's about...
Oh, I know about NAMI, yep.
Mm-hmm. It's National Alliance on Mental Illness, and
yep.
They had a lot of articles.
I actually interviewed them, so I know exactly what organization you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I liked everything that they wrote because it's putting everything into perspective, which is where it has to be, and it's not talking about everything that I read just now didn't say. It said that you could regain some of your balance is what it's saying, but it's always going to be a journey. But I must tell you, and I say this with all due respect to myself and everybody else that I love. Isn't that true of all of us?
Right, right.
I mean, isn't it true that all of us struggle for balance? And isn't it true that all of us have our own issues? My family picks on me. I never knew I was like this until maybe the last 10 or 15 years. But I have a little bit of OCD. Everything has to be... balanced in a room. Pictures can't be crooked. Lampshades can't be crooked. Chairs have to be in the right place. The corner of a doily or the corner of the bedspread can't be turned up or can't be longer on one side and shorter on the other side. I never knew this stuff about me. And my youngest son will see me in my big living room watching TV or something. He'll come in and flap over the side of the throw rug just to see how long it takes me to jump up and fix it.
I love it. Yeah, I know.
So I think we all have those kind of issues, and we all do some of those silly things that other people look at us and say, God, get a grip. Who cares if that's like that, or who cares about this? But if it bugs you, it bugs you, right?
But it is, you're right. Those little mm-hmm. things, and I think a lot of people have some elements of OCDs and things like that. Like this is like going to sound stupid to everybody, but it's true. If I get a cup of Starbucks coffee, I can't drink it unless the top where the mouthpiece is lined up with the Starbucks logo. I mean, how stupid is that? I can say it out loud and I can say it's stupid, and yet I still won't be able to drink the coffee unless I turn the lid around so that the logo's facing me. Now, how dumb is that? I mean, what difference does it make? But
because it's just one of those little things that just bugs you. You know, that's like the toilet paper issue. The toilet paper issue is so funny. The people that believe it's supposed to come down on the inside and the people that believe it's supposed to go out on the other side. And people actually get angry about it.
I know. And it's like,
you know,
if you really put your thoughts to it, like, what difference does it make? But, yeah, you're right. And you know,
just be grateful you have toilet paper, everybody.
Right. So everybody can see that there's little elements that we all have, but when it becomes to the point where it diminishes your ability to have control of your life and to have a happy life, that's when you have to do something about it. I mean, you know, my little thing with my cup of coffee, it doesn't change anything, so I kind of give into it. But if it went beyond that, if it started getting to the point where I couldn't do certain things unless I was able to have something in proper alignment, then I'd have to deal with it. you know. And it's, you know, it comes to a point where, you know, does it diminish your life or does it restrict you? You know?
Well,
are kind of nice because they keep your world orderly. So it's not all negative, but when it restricts you, then you have to take a look at it.
I agree with that. And I also agree with the fact that when you know something about yourself, that's a very healthy sign. I had a very, very interesting conversation with somebody that I'm very, very close to today. And I talked about the fact that I've, in our life, this person and I have known people who are most of the time just very self-centered, and their world only revolves around them. And I said, they don't ever look at the big picture and the ripple effect and the domino effect, which we talk about on the show so, so often. And she, from out of the blue, said, I understand because that's who I am. And I was like, I know. I didn't know you knew, but I know. And
wow.
She said, yeah, I do know. And I said, and she said, is it good that I know? And I said, it's awesome that you know. Because now that means that you can, you know, not overnight make it different than that, but open up little doors of opportunity that make little changes in that. It's okay to worry about yourself. It's okay to be concerned about your own personal comforts and everything. But when they take precedence, you make the people around you pretty damn miserable.
Right, right.
You know? And you're also trying to achieve a place of perfection that truly doesn't exist. So that gets pretty difficult to deal with as well, you know, makes you think like it's possible to get to a place where, you know, nothing ever goes wrong in your life, and that's truly not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to read, this is a request from one of our listeners, Renee Brewer, could you do a show at some time on the uncared of the mentally ill? I mean, we can put things in outer space, and we are so technologically advanced, but yet, Renee, we have no actual mental health resources. And she's in an arena where she can actually talk about that. She feels that if we can do things, made such strides with things like diabetes and cancer and all the other things, what makes the brain function so different and so, I don't know, so difficult to deal with? And I did text this person back, and I said, we will definitely do a show. We touch on this quite a bit just in the course of conversations about other things. So I do know it's a big thing, and I do know it's something that everybody worries about. And just this week when we talked about the prostitution and the street people and all the kids that we know, and then the articles that I read today, every one of them alluded to the fact that that's where a lot of these young people end up, in the streets.
Right.
So I don't know either what the answers are, but I do know you and I have talked at length about the fact that we believe that our nourishment comes in many ways. We are nourished by our food and water, and we are nourished by the words that people give to us and the actions that people treat us with. But we've also talked about the fact from all the years, and of course you've been on this journey longer than I have, but we've talked about some of the chemicals that we put in our bodies. And if our body and our mind is already working under duress, it's like everything else. It's like my story about standing in a wheat field. I can stand in a wheat field. I love it. It smells so sweet and so beautiful, and the wind can be blowing. I don't get all itchy. My nose doesn't swell up. You take our friend Diane and put her in the middle of a wheat field, and she'd go into, we'd have to take her for an EpiPen.
Right, right. Well, one of the things, and we've discussed this before, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think it's worthwhile just putting it out there, is that a lot of diagnoses are misdiagnoses, unfortunately. Now, if there is a certain part of the population that truly have severe mental illnesses where pharmaceutical drugs will get them into balance and at least allow them to have some normalcy and control over their life. I know a woman right now who has to be on medication all the time. If she's not, she becomes paranoid. She becomes completely dysfunctional, and she happens to be very, very intelligent. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the truth.
I know people like that as well.
Yeah, right. The truth of the matter is that I'm going to go out on a limb here based on some of the research I'm doing. The majority of people that are diagnosed with mental illnesses don't actually have them. They have other disorders that the side effects from either medication or their diet or allergies, believe it or not, allergies can have emotional symptoms. Lyme disease can have emotional symptoms to it, which are misdiagnosed for mental illness. And then it's compounded by putting them on psychiatric medication, which then, because they don't need it, causes other side effects. But I've used the example of my nephew before. When he was a young boy, he was my sister and brother-in-law were called into the school because he was deemed incorrigible. They couldn't calm him down. He was very angry. They almost thought he was suffering from abuse, and they told Nina and her husband that they had to get him under control. Thank God, Nina was seeing a very, very in-tune pediatrician who recognized nutrition. He was one of the only ones who did at that time. I mean, and they changed his diet. They cleaned up his diet. He had to go on what was called a clean diet. He'd take sugars and preservatives. So Nina had to start shopping in stores that sold, natural products and read the labels and make sure it didn't have corn syrup in it and a lot of sugar and stuff like this. But within 2 weeks, he was like an angel. His personality changed completely. He wasn't angry anymore. And my brother-in-law didn't buy it. Because he didn't see that side of his son. He wasn't home a lot. Comes home one night to prove a point, gave this kid a Twinkie, a single Twinkie, and my nephew went nuts. He ate the Twinkie, and in less than 5 minutes, he was in the hallway crying. His face was red. I mean, I saw the whole thing, and banging his head against the wall until he made his forehead bleed because he felt like he was coming apart just from that little amount of sugar. It just threw his whole balance out. And he actually overreacted because he had been clean for 2 weeks. But kids can have that kind of reaction where they look like they're really, really bad kids, but all it is that there's so many chemicals in food today. The amount of sugar is unacceptable. The food dyes, anything that's got aspartame in it, anything that has MSG in it, these are all chemicals that are not nutritive to our body. They're put in there to either add flavor or create cravings. Unfortunately, some of the things that are put in food are to actually make people crave more of it. It's one of the reasons why obesity is at an epidemic level in this country. It's not that people don't have willpower. It's that they're eating food that's making them desire more because of some of the additives that are put in the food. But these affect us on an emotional level. So a lot of people... Even depression, it can even create depressions in us because these are chemicals. They affect the brain. So it sounds like a simplistic approach, all right, but if people could try to just clean up their diet a little bit, get the sodas out of the diet, drink more clean water, all right, lighten your load a little bit, read labels, try to eat things that are more natural. You don't have to necessarily, I always recommend organic and stuff like that, but you don't necessarily have to go organic. There's other natural products out there. Pick it up, read the package, and see if the ingredients go on for a paragraph or if it's maybe 8 or 9 items that you can all tell what they are. That's a good place to start. And if there's not any benefit if it's for your child that you're trying to get your child calm down, or for another loved one. And if you don't see any dramatic changes, then maybe then look at the pharmaceutical route. But the a lot of times the dietary impact can be hugely, hugely substantial, and can sometimes actually be the cause of some behavioral difficulties that are then misdiagnosed as mental illness, and all they are is actually behavioral problems brought on by people not being able to metabolize some of the chemicals that are in not natural foods.
Well, everything I read tonight, they don't talk about that, but they do talk about the fact that there's many facets to these kind of illnesses. But most of the illnesses that they're talking about, like I said, my experience at Hippocrates with many of the people that came to see us, whose parents and loved ones wanted to see something different happen to them, it was a joint effort. For sure, if they could clean up their diet, there was a positive reaction. But they never, ever could have gone without pharmaceuticals, because they were at a place that was just too far on the other side. But there was an opportunity to bring in a happier balance. One of the things that is a major complaint about the pharmaceuticals, with no other alternatives to go with the pharmaceuticals, like the group meetings, like the camaraderie with other people, and all the things that make you more socially adept to your life, is you have to have a balance, just like I said before. And I think that I will never forget, as long as I live, the day that beautiful, very, very handsome man showed up at Hippocrates, mm-hmm. and couldn't speak English, and we had to send one of our Spanish-speaking housekeeping staff around with him, and we gave him a room on a Wednesday, which was unheard of, but everybody just... He was just so nice and really needed to be there. And then I find out within the hour of him being in that room, I get a phone call telling me to stay away from him, that he could be harmful to me. And I went to his room with one of the young men that worked with us and knocked on the door. He grabbed my hand, pulled me in the room, and said, "Oh, my God, you're here while I know what I'm doing. Please sit down and let me tell you everything while I'm here." And I didn't know what he was talking about. "Why you're here? I thought you couldn't speak English." He said, "Who told you that?" And I sat with this man and read him parts of the Jehovah Witness Bible, or whatever you call it, to keep him calm until his family came after him. And he had just left the home, and he had been in an institute, and they were releasing him, and something got messed up with his meds, and he took all of his wife's jewelry and dug holes on the beach and buried it all.
That's how they found out that he had.
So, and again, you know, he showed me. He carried a briefcase full of all of his credentials. Full of them, his wedding pictures, and he would carry. While he was lucid, he said to me, "I carry these to remind myself who I am." And he was so distraught that he said, "Wait here." And I said, "Please don't leave." And he said, "I'm not going to. I just have to go outside." And he went outside, and I walked to the window and watched him. And he went outside and was vomiting, physically ill, because of all the trauma involved. This is severe mental illness. Would it help him to clean up his diet and get himself in a place to be able to accept all the pharmaceuticals that he's got to take to get himself together? Absolutely. Hands down, absolutely. But this is the kind of mental illness that they reach. Now, when you're talking about little kids, I think, hands down, the first thing you should do before you do anything else is clean up their diet. Absolutely, positively. But
right.
Once you get an adult, and like the article that I just read, it says, let me see if I can find that. Mental illness usually strike individual in the prime of their lives, often during adolescence and young adulthood. Many of the young people that were brought to us were diagnosed with schizophrenia or multiple personalities at the age of 17 through 19. And just all of a sudden, you know, just out of the blue, this is what's going on in their life. So I agree with you about the food. And aspartame, I know. I've read all the books on aspartame because I've always used aspartame my whole life. I like it better than I like real sugar is the truth of the matter. And I know that I shouldn't use it. I know that. I get that. So I really try to not use it. But I do, and it's become almost habitual for me to use something with aspartame in it. So my own issues, but I do get. And do you remember the chiropractor that came to see us that was getting so ill and was having all these problems? And he was a very successful chiropractor on the West Coast. And when he realized, when he took aspartame away from himself, cleaned up his diet to a degree. He became a vegetarian, but not a raw foodist and not a total vegan. But he gave up red meat and pork and things like that. But he also gave up aspartame and got himself back on level ground just by giving up the
right.
aspartame and cleaning up his
right.
diet just a little bit. And he was in his 50s.
Right.
And
right.
Clark, do you remember him? His last name was Clark, Dr. Clark.
Oh yeah.
He wrote a book.
Well, just so people know, in case there's people listening right now, because aspartame really is a huge issue. There's stevia and xylitol. Now, stevia can have a slightly bitter taste to it, so some people don't choose to go to it. But stevia is good for people that have. Well, it's actually good for anybody. It comes in powder form and liquid form. It's good for diabetics because it doesn't actually have any sugar content to it, so it doesn't mess with our sugar numbers. But there's something called xylitol that is just as safe, just as beneficial, and it has more of a sugar consistency and more of a sugar taste. So if you can find things that have xylitol, it starts with an X, by the way. It's pronounced xylitol, but it starts with XY, xylitol, XYL. I-T-O-L, something like
that. Yeah, I've seen it at Whole Foods. Yeah. Matter of fact, I think I have some in the cupboard,
A friend of mine actually buys it in 5-pound bags because that's all she uses. She doesn't use sugar. She doesn't use stevia. She prefers that because it tastes so much like sugar and it's usable. And what it does is it satisfies the sugar craving because anything you would make with sugar, you can make with this. But you're not adding the calories and you're not adding the sugar spike to your bloodstream. And it's actually good for the pancreas, which is interesting because sugar is not good for the pancreas. But both stevia and xylitol are both good for the pancreas. So that's just something to throw out there because that can be an issue.
Well, I think if you watch TV, which I think probably most people do today, although I have a few friends who don't watch a lot of television. I'm not one of them, but stevia is all over the advertisements. They show the stevia plant. They talk about it. They talk about Truvia. But
Truvia is not good. Truvia has things added to it. I don't like that brand. There are other brands. You just have to read the package. It has to be either 100% stevia or stevia mixed with xylitol. If you read the Truvia package, there's other stuff in there that's not natural and that's not from the stevia plant. But again, it's mass marketing, and you've got these grocers. They're trying to hop on the natural wagon without being natural. So
that's why I brought it up, because people are going to go out and buy Truvia because it's advertised all over the television.
Yeah.
The stevia plant, it's advertised daily. So it's
right.
not the same thing, and it is what's the word I want? It's put together a different way. What is the word I want? I can't think of the word I want. But it's made in a fashion that takes away from the goodness of the actual stevia plant, so that you all
exactly.
understand that. And
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want people to think, you know, we say stevia and then they see that advertisement and they think that that's the way to go. So plus that it's not very good. I've tried it and it just isn't very good. I use powder stevia, real stevia,
yeah.
and I use liquid stevia. And I don't mind either one of them because if you use saccharin like I have since I was a little girl, you expect that aftertaste, and maybe that's one of the things that I'm hooked on, is a little bit of that aftertaste.
Interestingly enough, Rainey, saccharin is safer than aspartame, and do you know that saccharin is used all over Europe? When I went to Germany, no matter where you were, in the airports, the restaurants, if you wanted a sweetener, they don't have equal. They don't have, what's the pink one, whatever, sweet and low.
Sweet and low.
They don't,
mm-hmm.
they don't have aspartame at all there. They don't use it. They don't sell it, but they have these little saccharin tablets everywhere you get.
Yep.
In little tiny pouches.
Yeah.
It's like a pill,
mm-hmm.
and you just drop
yep.
it in your food, and that's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I always used as a kid, because my grandma used it, and
yep.
I used it as well.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I will say, and then we can move on, but if you go on Amazon.com, there's something called Stevia Supreme. I get it on there because it's really cheap, and I get it in these packets that you get a box for like just a few bucks, and it's got 50 envelopes in it that are single serving, and I just throw a couple in my purse, and I can take them when I go out and stuff, or I want to get a cup of coffee or something. And each one is equal
mm-hmm.
to about a teaspoonful, but it's a powder. And
mm-hmm.
and it's got a little bit of xylitol in it, which kind of, it counteracts that bitterness of the stevia. So you have the benefit of both the stevia and the sweeter composition of the xylitol, but it's in a powder. And you can just take these little packets and throw them in your purse. So that's what I do. I keep a bunch in my desk at work and stuff like that. So it makes it very convenient.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's what I do with my sweeteners too, because I haven't used real sugar and I can't even tell you how long. But
mm-hmm.
but I agree with all of this, and I think that all of these things add to the different issues that are out there in regard to imbalance in our bodies and in our minds. But some things are truly. Mental illness.
Right.
There's something that's not firing right. And interesting situation recently. My family member had a brain scan, and it's my son, and he was hit by a car when he was 13, and I've talked about that a little bit on the show before, and it was 30 years ago. And now on the brain scan that they took, they can see the harm and the problems in his brain that are just starting to manifest themselves in his brain from 30 years ago. So the brain is a very, very intricate part of our body. And it's like the brain, the right side of your brain, you know, takes care of the left side of your body's motor skills and vice versa. It's
right.
It's a very, very intricate piece of equipment, our brains. And
yep.
It can be very scary when you think about it, but I do think that the world is ready for some real, with all the things that we talk about, all the problems that happen, the boys that go in and shoot all the kids in school, and the this that happens, and the woman who I just watched that movie again the other day with where she kills all the guys. She's a hooker and she kills all the guys here in Florida, and the Eileen. the Eileen Voris story or something like that.
You're talking about,
all
yeah.
of these kind of things, you know, and all of the other people that are out there executing awful, off-the-wall acts against other people is almost always caused by some kind of imbalance in their brain. Normal, if there is such a thing as normal, a normal person doesn't stab somebody 15 times. This girl that just went to court for stabbing her boyfriend 15 times, and first she says, yeah, you need to put me to death, and then they say, yeah, you're right, she's going to be executed, and then she changes her mind. Do you think she's okay? Of course she's not okay. Of course she's not okay. Or the woman, the woman who's in jail right now for driving her two kids into the lake and telling everybody somebody stole their car. And she stood right there and watched the car go in the lake with her two beautiful little boys in it and drowned. Do you think she's okay? Of course she's not okay. These kind of mental illnesses are what is causing so many of the problems. And I said this the night that we talked about all the things that happened in the schools and all the things that were going on. And I said, until we get a handle on our mental illness, which is rampant, not straitjacket mental illness, imbalanced mental illness, where people cannot cope with their life. The article that I just read talked about copability and the inability to have copability. This is what's causing so many of these tragedies, senseless tragedies. And we've got to figure out what to do about that. And just handing somebody a few pills and telling them to stay on them and monitoring them once a month obviously isn't working.
Right. Well, see, the whole thing is that in some cases, the drugs actually precipitate violent action. So I agree with you that, number one, there are situations, although I believe that I believe it's less common than not, okay? But there are mental disorders that absolutely need the pharmaceuticals, I have no doubt, because, like I said, I have a friend of mine who does need that on a daily basis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that there are a lot of these psychiatric drugs that are, the side effects are worse than what the original condition was, and they can take someone who's suffering and not coping and actually turn them into somebody that's either suicidal or homicidal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, and that, but see, that's, in a lot of cases, that's happening because nobody's watching them after they give them the pharmaceutical. There's no follow through. There's no, it ha, you know, my mother, when my mother got lung cancer way back in 1981, I come home, she's already had half a lung taken out. She had tried to go back to work. It didn't work. I take her to the hospital. This is after the surgery, after everything. She's supposedly back into recovery. And I call the doctors, and they tell me to bring her in, and they tell me that the cancer has gone from her lung to her ribs, and two of her rib bones are gone completely, and we just have to keep her comfortable. So 2 weeks later, she was on like 12 medications, Shell, and some of them were very heavy duty. And I come in, and she's sitting on the couch. My dad's asleep in the chair. He had been like minding her during the day. I mean, she could function. She could talk. She took herself to the bathroom and everything. She just was incredibly ill and emaciated. And Joey was at work. I was at work. Danny was in school. So I come in, and she's shaking uncontrollably. I call 911. The paramedics come. I call the doctor. They say to me, Renee, read me all the medication she's on. I said, what? Read me all the medication she's on. I said, why do I have to read you all the medication she's on? You put her on them. Why don't you know the names of all the medications my mother's on? Will you please just read them to me? So I go get all the bottles. Like I said, there's 12 of them. I put them in front of me. I start reading them. Oh, my God, she's not supposed to take Theodore with this. And I'm like, you know, they almost killed her. They almost killed her.
Yep,
and
yep.
every doctor that I go see, everything's in the system, in the computer for Big Spike's episode that he's going through right now. Everything. And yet, now I carry a card that I printed up on my own computer with dosages and everything of every medication he's on. And I walk into a doctor's office and I hand them this piece of paper, let them copy it and hand it back to me. So a lot of what you're talking about, albeit very true, and there's a lot of reality to that happening, a lot of it is not just because they've given them the drug, it's because they haven't monitored the drug.
Right.
Would you
Exactly.
Or taken into account the reactions of somebody who only weighs 80 pounds now who used to weigh 150.
Exactly.
So as much as you love your animals, if you even went over to your holistic vet and he put your dog on something and after 5 days of being on it, you see that he's not better, he's worse. And you call your vet because it's physical, just like with me seeing my mom like that. But when it's mental, there are often no outward signs right away.
Right.
So it really has to be, that's why it's beneficial to be at the group things, to be socially active with other people who will recognize things and be in scenarios where you're going to, where you're going to be around other people that are going through the same kind of journey that you are. Then there's a little bit of hope of somebody recognizing, you know, that something's not, you're on this, well, you shouldn't be having this problem and you shouldn't be having that problem. The place
Or you might hear somebody, you, the person who is having the issue, might hear somebody say, you know, 6 months ago they screwed up my medication and for days I was feeling like this, and you're sitting there going, oh my God, that's how I'm feeling, and it might alert the person to follow up and say, hey, I think there's something wrong with my dose or something like that. So, yeah, so the group idea is definitely beneficial.
Well, and again, you know, you can't, plus that, you know, for so many years we all so blindly followed directions from a doctor, from a policeman, from a judge, forgetting that they were all human and are still all human and certainly make mistakes. And to not question, if somebody gives you something and you don't feel right when you're taking it and something is making you feel different, you have to say something. You have to react to it, because chances are nobody's going to ask you how you feel after you took it.
Remember when I told you when I locked my neck that time? And, I mean, I don't take a lot of medication. I'm very intolerant to it because I always have reactions. But I had locked my neck severe muscle spasm to the point where I couldn't lift either one of my arms. And they gave me Valium. Okay, it's a particular type of Valium that's a muscle relaxer. And I wouldn't take any of the other medication, but I couldn't move my arms, so I went ahead and I took the Valium. Now, I'm a very up person. I've never had a depressive disorder, never, you know, nothing like that. And within, I think it was by the third pill, it did what it was supposed to do. It relaxed the muscles in my shoulders enough where I could use my arms. I wasn't in intense pain anymore. But by the next morning, I was like almost suicidal. And I mean, this is a little pill, a little teeny tiny pill. I had taken three of them by then. And I'm like, oh, my God, I know people that are on, like, Valium, like, every day. And there's all kinds of warnings about that it causes depression a lot. I mean, I was overwhelmed. The only thing is, thank God, I have enough self-awareness to realize there was nothing for me to be upset about. So I knew it was the medication. I stopped immediately. It did what it was supposed to do. I did, you know, I was able to use my arms. And I just stopped. And I didn't take any more of the bottle because it was just such an overwhelming reaction I had to it. And it took about a half a day for that to finally ebb off and for me to be okay. But
I've been there too. Yeah, I've been there too with medications. We're out of time though, and I want to make a promise to everybody. We are going to have some more shows that are regarding mental illness, and we're going to get some people on the show that can help answer questions. And please let me know if you have questions that you'd like asked. If you don't want to call in yourself, I'll be happy to do that. We'll probably do that one day next week, but I'll make sure everybody knows when it is. So, everybody, from my heart to yours, this is Renee saying good night and God bless. And good night, Shell. I'll see you in the morning.
Yes, you will. Good night, hon. Good night, everyone.
Good night.